episode 29 of the Frank Online Marketing Show, brought to you by IBM Canada. My name is Tema Frank, and I'm your host. There's a company out of Montreal that's been making a lot of waves in the men's fashion industry lately. The company is called Frank and Oak, and I forgot to ask them where that name came from, so I really must get back in touch with them. Anyway, I had an interview with the co-founder, Ethan Song. Despite his suave, sophisticated look when I've seen photographs of him, I got to admit, he sounds very much like your typical excited, young, successful entrepreneur, which is exactly what he is. I think you'll find the interview interesting, and I'll have some things to point out after the interview that I think are important for a lot of businesses, not just those in fashion or online fashion.
My name is Ethan. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Frank and Oak, and we focus on creating a fully integrated shopping experience for men. How we actually got going was the fact that, you know, as guys ourselves, we realized that there just aren't a lot of offerings out there for men. And, you know, the way the offerings are designed, the way you actually get to the products, the experience was also not designed for men. So when myself and my co-founder, Isham, we went about, you know, creating our business, we basically looked at the products. You know, in many ways, the products being the technology, driving the shopping experience, the actual products, the fashion that you buy from our site, and finally, the actual, you know, experience of consuming the product. And that's why we came up that, you know, as an example, that guys are just not as knowledgeable about clothing as women are. Therefore, we needed to add a content element to it. Guys don't always know what are the right items to wear, so we needed to have a personalization aspect to it. So that's sort of like based on the, you know, this unique challenge of helping guys dress better. That's how we created the Frank and Oak retail model.
Can you tell me a little bit more about, you talk about the personalization aspect. How do you handle that?
From a technology standpoint, we basically capture a ton of data on what the clients are buying, the types of products they're viewing, which actually allows our algorithm to push more relevant products to them. And one thing that's interesting is that, you know, although quite a few sites will do that, login shopping basis, we do it actually based on a monthly basis where, you know, we'll evolve a client selection from month to month. We call it like lifestyle journey, where basically on month one we'll show you something, and month two we'll show you something else based on what you purchase or what you like. Within that, we'll show you something else on month three. So that's the way we do things. But I think that personalization goes much beyond the actual technology. The way we're also integrating it is that through our customer service, where basically, you know, as customers use our site, our customer service team, you know, uses as much information as possible to give not just your typical, like, you know, returns and things like that type of information, but also recommendations to customers that have better experience.
When you talk recommendations, then, are you, for instance, keeping track of if they bought this before, this new item would actually work with it, or just...
Yeah, absolutely. We use a lot of contextual, so, like, you know, trying to understand what kind of lifestyle, you know, what age, what kind of, like, you know, priorities our customers have in their lives to better recommend products. Sometimes it's not as simple as saying, you know, because they bought a blue shirt 2 months ago, they would like a blue shirt now. I think that sometimes you also have to have information and kind of, like, recommend stuff that's slightly more, that's fashionable.
Mm-hmm. My understanding from looking at your website is that you do this thing where you bring out a fresh collection basically every month.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
How can you be creating that much new product and still having it tailored to individuals' desires or buying patterns? How does that work?
The only way you can actually tailor to individual pattern is by having a lot of products, right? Because what you're doing is that you're basically offering options, and different people want different options. So you kind of have to have a wide selection of products. But, you know, at first we basically only show, you know, only a few products to our clients, and by highlighting a few products but also offering them other options, we're kind of creating the best of two worlds, which is the convenience of having recommendation, but also the convenience of that if I don't like the recommendation, it's easy for me to have access to other products. And if a client doesn't shop from the actual recommendation but chooses to shop from elsewhere on the site, it gives us more input onto what that person may buy next month, and therefore it actually improves their recommendation.
So how do you deal with that, though, having a wide selection of products and turning them over every month? What do you do with the stuff that you don't sell?
We keep very, very short inventory. So, you know, of all the stuff that we buy basically as little as possible. And that allows us to actually not have very deep inventory, but have a wide variety of products. And, it also creates a sense of uniqueness in the sense that a lot of times when clients buy a product, they'll be the only person in that city wearing the product. So that's very important to us. But beyond that, you know, the way the products are used is that not everyone sees the same products in a specific month.
That's interesting. Okay.
Items are basically re-merchandised and, you know, reshuffled based on like personalization and based on how long we want that item to be relevant for our clients. So that's the way that we're actually able to like sell out of an item is that you may only see it for a month, but it does not mean that we're only selling it for a month.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense then.
Yeah.
So if John logs into your site on a given day, he will be seeing different things from what Peter is seeing.
Exactly. So that's why, you know, we do have new products coming in every month, but that doesn't mean that everything always refreshes every month.
Okay. Well, I'm intrigued too by your comment of limiting what you show them. I mean, I know that in social psychology research, you know, people can get overwhelmed if they have too many choices.
Absolutely.
And so you're trying to leverage that then by not giving them too much at once.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is something that we've tested quite a few different quantities, and we obviously try to understand like the way guys actually think about clothing. And I think that one thing we realize is that women tend to enjoy the actual act of like shopping and seeking that specific item, and the actual hunt for that perfect item is part of the fun. Whereas, especially for guys, like when you take the guy and you bring him into like a shopping mall or into a store that has thousands of products, they quickly get overwhelmed. You know, kind of like if I have like 12 different kinds of pants in front of me and I have to try each one of them to know which one will fit, it really becomes like a chore more than an enjoyment. So the way we're trying to do it is to say, well, instead of showing you 12, why don't we show you 4, and hopefully out of the 4, there's 2 that you like. And
clever, very clever. What got you guys going on this? How did you even clue into the fact that there was a need or a demand for this?
I guess at first it was just we were interested in, you know, in doing menswear ourselves because we're guys and, you know, those were products that we would like to consume. But then when we actually considered doing, you know, more seriously to actually going into business, and then we looked at the market and we just realized like how much more there is for women out there than there is for men.
Yeah.
You know, guys spend a lot of time on their computers, right? So combining that market opportunity with our own taste and fashion.
So how do you market to men? How do you make them aware of the fact that you even exist if they're not typically going online to shop for clothing?
We've benefited right from the start from like your tremendous like word of mouth and people wanting to share your experience. But beyond that, we use different kinds of online advertising. We'll advertise, as an example, on music sites or on sites about news because we believe that our client is the type of client that enjoys those kind of sites. So it's kind of having that deep understanding of where the customer actually hangs out online.
Cool. Okay. And you also have an intriguing aspect with your hunt club. Can you tell us a bit about how that works?
When we designed the club, we had this really idea of like, well, what if, you know, every month you would get the GQ or a magazine, but instead of just having a magazine, you would get the editor's pick already included in the magazine. So really, at that point, you're not just consuming content, but the actual clothing. So what you're learning about it, it's conveniently placed with it. So that we basically designed like a monthly program where like every month you go on our site and you can select like up to like 4 items that are recommended for you based on like the content and the editor's picks. And you just get it at home and it's basically like, you know, free home try on for those clothes, and you keep what you like and you return what you don't like. And that's the way that the Hunt Club is built, and that has been a big part of our success. And we've just realized that a lot of guys actually do like this sort of like more integrated experience. But we kind of kept, you know, just a regular e-commerce experience as well for guys that just, you know, prefer to buy whenever they feel like buying.
So with the Hunt Club, then you've got guaranteed heavy-duty shipping costs. How do you deal with that? Because people are shipping both ways, right?
Because people have to select items that they want, people don't return as much as you may think because we don't send a fixed amount of items. You can choose to receive 1 item or 2 items or 3 items. So the returns are actually, so they're not getting items that they have no idea what they're getting. So
So they have the right to return a couple if they want, but odds are if you've done your job right and they've chosen right, they won't return them.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, for a lot of guys, actually returning the item is also a hassle. So still pick items that they, you know, at least like at 75% that they like. Still, there is for sure a cost for us, but it creates such an engaged customer. I really see it in the same way as the magazine world, where it's basically if you buy at the newsstand, you'll pay a bit more than if you get a subscription. And the reason why is because the people that have a subscription are highly engaged on a monthly basis, and the guys that are signed up to the Hunt Club, you know, will typically buy on a monthly basis. So even though on a certain purchase we may make a bit less money, the service that we render them will generate greater value over time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It sounds like what you're doing is very database and number heavy in terms of calculating the analytics to figure out who's going to want what. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's combining analytics with sort of like the knowledge of our stylists and designers. You know, the data can't tell you everything about what's coming up, especially when you're in a field that's creative, like, you know, fashion and style.
Yeah.
We look at what's in the market and what we think is right for a customer. But then beyond that, once we have made those choices, I think that we sort of act as a stylist, which is to say, well, here's the whole collection that may be right for a bunch of different people, but what's more right for you? And I think that for that aspect, we use a lot of analytics, and we actually use deep analytics, not just at the point of sales, but also taking into account, well, how fast this one item sell, what's the demand on it, and what's the wait list on it. Based on that, we're able to calculate how much we should reorder it and when we should reorder it. Because we're an integrated business and, you know, we make our own clothes, we're actually able to use that data and find all that all the way to manufacturing as well.
Part of your model is you've cut out some layers of middlemen and you can turn things around a lot more quickly than is standard in this industry. Is that right?
Absolutely. We've just noticed, and especially in men, that there's just not that much, you know, available brands and inventory out there. So I think, you know, having a unique product on the market allows us actually the flexibility to sort of buy any quantities that we want in, you know, certain goods, which allows us to personalize it, but also allows us to take the feedback of our customers and adjust the fit, the flows, you know, bring more colors in one certain style, which we could never do if we're buying from other brands.
Well, and one of the complaints that I've heard from people in fashion-related businesses is the notion of having to predict a year or half a year in advance what's going to be stylish. So are your lead times then in designing and actually manufacturing something, they're significantly shorter?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we don't work on a seasonal basis, introduce products on a monthly basis. We always just only manufacture and design one month at a time and never more than 2 months before it's being sold, which allows us to actually be probably like 4 times faster than most other retailers.
So why are other retailers still doing it that way? Is that the only way you can do it at a mass level?
The reality is that not all other retailers are doing it that way. I think that if you look at industry champions right now, they're not doing it that way. So like, you know, okay. Like in M and Zara, they're not.
Yeah,
doing
I was
it
just
that
thinking
way.
Of that. Yeah.
And that's the reason why they've done so well, because they're integrated, they're lean, and they don't overproduce, but they continuously produce, you know, new stuff. We're sort of applying that fast model to internet, but because we don't have to dispatch goods to stores, that actually helps us to save an extra like 2 or 3 weeks out of production time.
Right. So roughly what percentage of your customer base is Canadian versus elsewhere? And elsewhere, I presume, is mostly the U.S.
About 70% in the U.S. and 30% in Canada right now.
So do you have a distribution point in both countries, or how does that work?
Our main distribution center is in Montreal, but we do have a small dispatch center in Champlain. So the goods are basically taken across the border and shipped out of there afterwards.
Okay, so that makes it a lot easier. Have you noticed any differences in how Canadian consumers are responding versus the American consumers?
Well, to tell the truth, is that, you know, like when we first started, we were like very focused on the U.S. market because, you know, it's obviously a large market, but we actually realized that the Canadian consumer is a much better, you know, a much better client in the sense that Canadian consumers tend to buy more per orders, and they tend to buy more often actually than American consumers. One thing that's interesting about Canadian consumers is that they're harder to convince to make the purchase. And I think that just has to do with the fact that, you know, Americans are used to buying more online.
Yeah.
You know, people typically like assume it because it's fashion, you know, we try to focus on places like Toronto and New York. But the reality is that a lot of our customers come from like secondary or smaller cities because when you think about it, in those cities, like having e-commerce sort of a liberation from like, you know, the restriction of the shops that are actually in that city.
Yeah.
So those are actually typically the guys that, you know, will buy like 10 items at a time because for them, that's the only place they can buy. And in their town, there's nothing that they like, you know?
Yay, I can finally get a full wardrobe. Yeah. What have been some of the biggest challenges or surprises that you have found since setting up this business?
The biggest challenge I find when you're running sort of like a e-commerce company that's also vertically integrated is the fact that you're managing, you know, so many different components that are very different, from production to supply chain to like marketing online to, you know, customer service. And I think that's being able to do all of these things well, I think that's the challenge. You know, when you're in a startup environment, people will typically say that, you know, you have to focus on do something, one thing really, really well. And I think that in e-commerce, it's just very difficult. You have to be able to do a lot of different things well. Otherwise, just maintaining the quality of the connection that you make with each customer as your customer base scales up. As you grow, you have to find a way to like make that into a process.
Can you elaborate a bit more about that, the process?
You know, when you first start, to create a more personalized an experience that's closer to your user, it's as simple as just writing a few more emails a day. You know, but once you start having like 10,000 of people shopping on your site on a daily basis, sometimes you can't just do that. So you have to create a culture and an environment where these things get done automatically and that everyone is involved in creating the experience.
Right. And how have you built that kind of culture? What do you do to make that, get everyone on the same page there?
Well, I mean, I think that for us, one thing that makes it easy is that most of our employees are sort of within our target market, you know, so they get excited about the product itself. They're sharing about the products. And when they see like customers posting on Instagram pictures of them wearing products, like this team gets motivated. But second of all, I think it's just integrating in all part of the experience. So having that direct connection, let's say, between our designers and the customers, having, you know, leaving my own email address on our site so that our customers can email me directly. Each customer service representative in our team takes like half a day, a week to write personal notes to like customers that, you know, they've enjoyed connecting with.
You guys got venture funding fairly early in the process. How did that happen? How did you manage with something that's so different to persuade them and even to get in touch with them? How did that work?
Well, we were very lucky. Most of our investors reached out to us. But I do think that it's a combination of having a good product on the market that's differentiated, but also, you know, you kind of have to create a bit of noise.
Yeah.
And I think that when we first launched, you know, we had, you know, good media coverage. We came out of the bat, like, you know, with a strong product right from the start. So showing, you know, professionalism, but showing like a true vision towards what we want to do. And I think that captured the attention of investors.
The company reminds me a little bit of Elux, who I interviewed in episode 23, in the sense that they're combining fashion content, editorial content, a glossy magazine approach, with providing the clothes that they're writing about. What's interesting here is that this company realized that men shop differently from women when it comes to clothing. For women, a lot of the shopping is, well, I shouldn't say for women, for a lot of women, a lot of the shopping experience is about actually getting out there and doing the shopping. Whereas men in general tend to want the results of the shopping without having to deal with going to the mall and trying stuff on. So basically what Frank and Oak has done is combined a method to give them confidence about what sorts of clothes are going to be stylish and appropriate, with making it simple for them to shop, so much so that they even actually have set up a monthly shopping program for those who are interested, so that they don't even have to think about it. It just kind of happens. Now, as with companies like BuildDirect, who I interviewed in episode 1, they've also cut out the middleman, or some of the middlemen, in order to make it cheaper to provide the clothes that they do, and also to make them much more responsive. They're not tied into the long purchasing cycles of larger retailers. They only prepare 1 or 2 months worth of fashions in advance, so they can adapt very quickly to changing market conditions. A few of the things that I think do apply to companies in all online businesses, not just this one: the challenge of maintaining a high standard of customer service as your company is growing. Like when you're starting out, it's really easy to write back to everybody who writes to you and maintain that level of excitement. But as you start to get thousands and tens of thousands of customers, how do you keep that mood going? And what they've identified are a couple of things. One that I thought was kind of cool was giving all their customer service staff a half a day a week during which they were to write personal notes to their clients. More significantly, what they've done is they've made sure that the people that they hire totally buy into the vision and are excited by the products. So it makes it much more easy for them to put themselves in the customer's shoes. Again, that may get more challenging as they get bigger still. Well, I think those are the main lessons for today. I will be traveling for the next few weeks. I certainly hope and intend to get the podcast out as usual on Friday, but there may be some slight delays. I've actually got a few interviews done, but I haven't had a chance to edit them all completely yet, so we'll see how things go during the trip. Anyway, I do look forward to getting your feedback. Please do contact me, Tema@frankonlinemarketing.com, and visit the website, frankonlinemarketing.com/show, if you want to hear the other episodes. And please, if you're listening to this in iTunes or Stitcher, give them some feedback, let them know how much you're enjoying the show, and share it with your friends. That's all for now. Talk to you next time.